Welcome to the deep dive. So you've sent over some really interesting material, these chapter excerpts that, well, they go pretty deep into the issue of poverty.
They certainly do, a complex topic.
Definitely. So our mission today really is to sift through all that and pull out the key takeaways. We want to build a clearer picture, you know, go beyond just a simple definition.
Right. Look at what drives it, how it's measured.
Exactly. And maybe most importantly, what we can actually do about it. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? Like, is poverty in a big city the same as in a remote village? Or what does it really take to break that cycle?
Good questions. Let's dive in. So starting with the basics, how do these sources define poverty? What's the core idea?
Well, they frame it as a socioeconomic thing, basically a lack of the resources and services you need for a decent basic standard of living.
But it's more than just not having enough money, right? The material emphasizes other kinds of lack.
Oh, absolutely. It lists things like not having enough food, clean water, sanitation, you know, proper shelter, healthcare, education, even access to information. It's a tough list.
Yeah.
And a really key point they make is that it's also about vulnerability, feeling excluded and, well, lacking the power to change your own situation. It's not just the physical stuff.
That powerlessness aspect is crucial. Now, the chapter you sent draws a line between absolute and relative poverty. Can you unpack that difference for us? Why does it matter?
Sure. So absolute poverty is, it's really about survival day to day. It's when you lack the income for the absolute basics, food, clothes, a roof over your head for a long time.
And I mentioned that World Bank figure.
Yeah, the International Poverty Line, currently $2.15 a day. The text paints a picture of someone, like, unable to afford even one meal or get clean water. Really stark.
That really highlights the immediate struggle, often in, say, developing nations.
Exactly. It's that fight for existence.
Yeah.
Then you have relative poverty. How does that show up differently?
Right. Relative poverty is, it's measured differently, isn't it? It's about where you stand compared to others in your own society.
Precisely. You might have food and shelter, but you're still significantly worse off than the average person around you. You're excluded from the typical way of life.
So things like transport or maybe certain educational opportunities.
Yeah, or even just participating in cultural stuff. The example given was someone who can't afford transport to get to a job or maybe can't access further education.
So it's less about immediate survival, perhaps, but more about opportunity and social inclusion, especially in more developed countries.
You got it. It highlights the inequalities within those societies. You're basically locked out of fully participating, even if your basic survival isn't threatened in the same way as absolute poverty.
Okay, that distinction is clear. So what drives all this? What did the sources say are the main reasons people get trapped in poverty, whether absolute or relative? It sounds like a whole mix of things.
It really is a web. The material points first to inadequate access to the fundamentals, clean water, nutritious food, that hits health, productivity.
Right, the basics. What else?
Limited job opportunities or just ways to earn a sustainable living. That's huge. And conflict, war, instability. It's just devastating, causes displacement, wrecks economies.
And the sources also brought up inequality quite a bit, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Big time. Inequality based on gender, caste, ethnicity, even just where you live. It means resources and chances aren't shared fairly.
And education plays a role, too.
Definitely. Poor education limits job prospects, sure, but also maybe your awareness of your rights or available support. And then there's, well, climate change.
Ah, yes. Increasingly important. How does that fit in?
It hits vulnerable populations hardest, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Natural disasters, impact on farming, livelihoods.
Yeah.
It pushes people back.
And thinking bigger picture, what about infrastructure? Does that come up?
Absolutely. Lack of roads, electricity, transport, it hinders access to everything.
Yeah.
Jobs, markets, healthcare, schools.
Makes sense. And governance?
Weak governance, corruption. They mentioned that too.
Yeah.
Inefficient services, resources not getting where they're needed. And personal things, like getting sick.
Oh, yeah. Illness can be catastrophic, right? The costs, losing income.
Exactly. And one that might surprise some people, low wages and job insecurity. People working full-time but still stuck below the poverty line, it shows how complex it really is.
Wow. Okay. So all these factors, they don't exist in isolation, do they? The chapter talks about a vicious cycle. How does that work? Can you break it down?
Yeah, it's like a self-feeding loop.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a family starts poor. Maybe they can't afford enough good food.
Okay.
So that leads to poor health, especially for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
That affects their concentration, their learning in school.
Right. Makes it harder to succeed academically.
Mm-hmm. So maybe they don't get a great education. That leads to limited job options later on. So low income as adults.
And that low income means they struggle to afford good food, healthcare, decent housing for their kids.
Exactly. And the cycle just repeats for the next generation. The material really stresses how incredibly tough it is to break free without some kind of outside help or intervention. It just keeps rolling downhill.
That's a powerful image. Now, to get a better handle on poverty beyond just income, the sources introduce the Global Multidimensional Poverty Index and the MPI. What's the big idea behind that?
The MPI is really interesting. It came out in 2010, developed by folks at Oxford and the UNDP. The core idea is that just looking at income, like that $2.15 a day, doesn't really tell the whole story of being poor.
It's too narrow.
Yeah. The MPI looks at multiple aspects of life at the same time. It focuses on three main dimensions: health, education, and living standards. And within those, there are 10 specific indicators.
Okay, let's unpack those. What falls under health?
For health, it looks at two things. Nutrition, are people, especially children, malnourished, and child mortality. Have any children in the family died? Pretty fundamental indicators of well-being.
Grim, but crucial.
And education.
Education looks at years of schooling, how long adults in the household went to school, and school attendance, are the kids who should be in school actually going.
Right, measuring both past achievement and current access. And the last one, living standards, what's included there. This one covers a lot of ground, the sort of daily realities. It includes the type of cooking fuel people use.
Like wood versus clean gas.
Exactly, because using things like wood or dung has health risks. Mm-hmm. It also looks at sanitation, do they have a decent toilet? Access to safe drinking water, electricity, what kind of floor, does the house have dirt or something better?
Okay, quite practical things.
Yeah, and also ownership of basic assets, things like a radio, TV, maybe a bicycle. It gives a broader sense of resources.
So how do they combine all this? How do you become multidimensionally poor?
Right, this is key. It's not just about lacking one thing. You're classified as multidimensionally poor if you're deprived in at least one-third of these indicators. But crucially, the indicators are weighted.
Weighted, meaning some deprivations count more than others.
Precisely. The idea is that lacking, say, safe water might be weighted more heavily than not owning a radio. It acknowledges different levels of severity. It gives a much more, well, nuanced view of the overlapping problems people face.
That makes a lot of sense. A richer picture than just income. Did the sources mention other ways poverty is measured, apart from the MPI?
Yeah, they gave a quick rundown. There are national poverty lines set by each country based on its own costs and standards.
Right, specific to the local context.
Mm-hmm. Then there's that international line we talked about, the $2.15 a day, mainly for tracking extreme global poverty. You've got the multidimensional indices like MPI. And in wealthier countries, they often use relative income thresholds.
Like, say, earning less than 60% of the median income.
Exactly. Something like that. And finally, they briefly mentioned looking at consumption versus income. Sometimes what people actually manage to consume can be a better indicator of their living standard than just their reported income, which can fluctuate.
Okay, a range of tools. So we've talked definition, causes, the cycle, measurement.
Yeah.
Now the big one, solutions. What did the chapter suggest can actually be done to reduce poverty?
This is where it gets practical. The material really stresses it has to be a team effort, government, international groups, civil society, everyone.
Not just one magic bullet.
Definitely not. The chapter lists about 10 main policy areas. First up is improving education, quantity, and quality. Better schools, trained teachers, making sure it's accessible, maybe free or subsidized. The link to better jobs is clear.
Makes sense. What about the economy overall?
Promoting economic growth is key. Supporting local industries, investing in infrastructure, encouraging entrepreneurs, anything that creates jobs and boosts prosperity.
And things like minimum wage.
Yep, that's mentioned. Setting a minimum wage to ensure people earn enough for basic needs and also reduce exploitation.
Okay. What about investment from outside the country?
Foreign direct investment, FDI. The idea is it brings in capital, technology, and hopefully jobs and helps build up industries.
So that's more on the economic side. What about direct support, like safety nets?
Right. Expanding state benefits is crucial, usually means tested, so targeted at the poorest. Things like cash transfers, help with food, or housing costs.
Got it. The chapter also mentioned something more structural, land reform. How does that fit?
Yeah, land reform. Redistributing land to those without it, securing ownership rights. The idea is it boosts farming productivity and income, especially in agricultural economies.
Interesting. And what about benefits in kind? What does that mean?
Instead of just cash, it's providing goods or services directly, either free or subsidized. Think school meals, free public transport passes, access to healthcare.
Ah, okay. direct provision? Any other big policy ideas discussed?
Well, they touch on universal basic income, UBI. That's the idea of regular unconditional payments to everyone, aiming for a basic living standard. Still debated, obviously.
Very hot topic right now.
Mm-hmm. And then improving healthcare access, making it affordable, ideally universal. This stops health shocks from tipping people into poverty and keeps people productive.
Crucial for resilience.
Absolutely. And finally, improving actual work conditions, making sure workplaces are safe, fair, secure, reducing exploitation, boosting morale and stability for workers. It's quite a comprehensive list of levers we can pull.
It really is. So wrapping this up, it's just crystal clear from the sources that poverty isn't simple. It's way more than just not having money. It hits dignity, opportunity.
Yeah, it limits people's ability to just contribute fully. Hmm. And understanding all these pieces, the causes, the effects, the potential solutions we just talked about, it feels essential if we actually want a fairer world.
Absolutely. And the takeaway seems to be that reducing it needs real coordinated action across the board. Economic policies, social support, political will, focusing on education, health, inclusive growth, strong safety nets.
It all has to work together.
Right.
So maybe a final thought for our listeners. Thinking about that interconnected vicious cycle we discussed, if you had to pick one type of intervention, which one do you think might have the biggest ripple effect, the most positive impact, and why? Something to chew on, considering everything we've covered.
A tough question, but a good one to ponder.
Indeed. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on this deep dive.